Hey, Chris Manning here on Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan Dammer and I are going to talk about this weekend's games and a whole bunch of other stuff going on with the Cavs, including 3-1 day and some things we're going to buy or sell in regards to the current iteration of Cavs. That's coming up on today's episode of Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox Adam tonight at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, how's it going, buddy? Hope you had a good 3-1 day. Before we get into the present Cavs and all the stuff going on there, including two games this weekend, do you have just a quick underrated moment thing coming out of that 2016 title that you're kind of, that you kind of want to just bring up here, is just kind of remind people?
I've been searching the bowels of the internet for probably about the last hour to find this article, but I hope I'm not going insane. But when Draymond Green shared, you know, after the dust kind of settled and Cleveland was in the midst of beginning life after LeBron part two, he admitted that he foresaw a dynasty forming in Cleveland after the Cavs knocked them out in 2016 after the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead. Happy 3-1 day, everyone. But that's why he recruited Kevin Durant, and I think maybe that's a bit of an underrated thing, is the Cavs were a key piece in tipping the balance of the NBA for about four seasons. So that's what I'm feeling in that regard. What about you? What about my co-hostess with the mostest?
it's Mo Williams winning a title.
Oh yeah.
I think that, and then just kind of the other weird part of it being that Andy Vergeau, who's in Cleveland for Zdrun Chalgauskas night, which was cool to see him and Z at the arena on Saturday. Seeing him win a title and then Andy obviously being on that Warriors team is just like a weird thing, because those are two guys who I think were pretty beloved by fans. Mo obviously was an integral part of those first LeBron eras. He was really, really good. And then if you look at Andy, he was just like the guy, kind of the most consistent, maybe played some of the best minutes for a long time when LeBron was not there. And then he's on the other side, just like getting roasted by the Cavs in that final series. So it's just like the dichotomy of the first era LeBron role guys kind of being in there is just one of those things I will always kind of remember when we're thinking about that.
First off, I think Steve Kerr's hubris and flying too close to the sun and playing Andy Vergeau in the finals definitely helped the Cavs. Steve doing his old team a solid. But I have a funny Mo Williams story, actually, before we get rolling here. So for my, God, how old was I at the time? 19th birthday, I wanted a Mo Williams jersey for Christmas, or for my birthday. And I got it because I was really excited because he was my favorite Cavalier because, you know, he's pretty much the only good thing the Cavs had going year one after LeBron part one. He was traded 15 days later. And I think that's when I started to learn that maybe I have a bit of a curse when it comes to wishing good things with this team.
Yeah. you'll have that. You'll have that kind of thing. I will never one of the things I will really remember, just random kind of things from the first era, the second LeBron era rather, was just I was downtown covering it was either a preseason game or a home opener, and it was just Isaiah, a whole family of four wearing Isaiah Thomas jerseys, and I was just like, I think about them more than I'd like to admit, and just hoping that they like got different jerseys at some point, because they just like went all in, and that you could not have picked a worse guy to just have your whole family. And those are not cheap, they're like $30 a pop for those jerseys, so like tough look for that family where if you're out there. Breaking Tea has a really cool Kevin Porter Jr. shirt that you should definitely go buy, because he's really fun and should be around for a long time. But so what Evan and I are going to talk about, yeah, go ahead.
He's 6'4", by the way. we kind of confirmed that last night.
Yeah, we've been our days as the I don't have like a non problematic analogy to make sure us here, but like I will no longer be truth and Kevin Porter Jr. is taller than 6'4". That shouts to Cameron Fields from Cleveland.com for looking at us like we're insane people, as Evan and I and James Rapine on Saturday were like wondering about this.
It's funny because Highgate went from training camp to February 29th, 2020, and Cameron's like, I'm 6'5". And we're like, oh, okay, well, then Kevin's taller than you. And then when Kevin was in the media scrum, I leaned over to you, just quietly said, I'm like, Cameron's taller than him. So
yeah. Really, a tough look for your favorite Cavs podcast host out there, just being proven wrong. And James Rapine, who's great, and didn't want to talk about leg workouts with me on Saturday. Really, really just was shunned and got made fun of about Joker in public. It's a tough look for me when I go to games. But what we're going to talk about today is this weekend's games. Cavs Pelicans was on Friday. The Cavs lose that one, and then they lose on Saturday to the Indiana Pacers. No Drummond Friday, and then you get him back on Saturday. And then we also get you don't get Tristan on Saturday. You have Kevin in both. You have pretty much everyone else in both. Colin Sexton was kind of the big performer Friday. Drummond kind of the big performer Saturday. I think both these games are sort of hard. There's not really a lot to do if you want to do a linear recap of these. But Evan, when you think about this weekend's games, as we kind of start getting into them here, what to you is the kind of the standout story as we're coming out of this weekend?
JB Bickerstaff kind of ducking the question if Andre is allowed to shoot threes or not. He kind of gave us a non-answer.
I will play the clip at the end of the segment just so people can hear it. I feel it's pretty good. Pretty good Bickerstaff, like saying something without saying it directly. Good stuff from JB Bickerstaff.
There. Really, really was. And just in case anyone who didn't watch the game against Indiana Saturday night, Andre Drummond was dribbling it between his legs like a point guard and dropped back to the perimeter and shot a three-pointer with confidence, again, like a guard, and missed it terribly. And I think if the Fox Sports Ohio like cameras and mics were in the press box, you would hear me go, bruh, like really loudly. And then you and I just both looked at each other in just absolute shock. And then I was reeling from that for a solid 10 minutes or so. So it's weird. I guess JB is okay with him and Tristan. And Larry Nance is the more solid of those three big guys to shoot three-pointers. And that's like one of my bigger takeaways is that if it's an open look, I guess they're allowed to shoot it. But it's not necessarily a part of the game plan. I don't know. Like I said, it was a non-answer within an answer. So I still don't know what to think of it. It's just... it was weird, but solid game.
Yeah, solid game. I thought the better of the two performances definitely was that game. I felt as if Drummond, I feel like I kind of like empathize with Drummond to a certain degree because I look at that game on Saturday and it's first he's missed two games with the calf issue or whatever it is. And here's his stat line if you want to just take out him shooting three-pointers, which obviously was like I think the thing that stood out the most from the game, and I think is like at the root cause of some of the things that like you're like I don't know about this from the Cavs. Okay, so take out three-pointers for him in this one. 12 of 18 from the field, 3-3 from the line, 13 boards, 12 on the defensive end, only one in the offensive end, 4 assists, 4 steals, a block, 27 points. Had a bad single game plus minus, but I don't care. You know, that's like a There's issues with that stat. So basically he's making, you know, two out of every three shots or something like that. It's pretty freaking good. You know, the offensive rebounding numbers are lower than normal, but if you look at just him playing against Sabonis and Turner, who both did a really nice job on the glass in that game, that's probably a reason why. You know, Kevin also was doing some work on the glass, and that one had 2 offensive rebounds. Like Drummond had a good game. Other than that, you know, the defensive stuff is a little wonky. He had a really nice. Him and Kevin had that amazing sequence, which was the Kevin outlet pass to Drummond, and then the other way around, and it just worked really well. Drummond had some good passes. He had some really nice drives, and just was really taking it to Miles Turner, which was like, he kind of physically dominated that matchup. And you're like, oh, this is kind of like what Drake can do here. The three-pointers are just like a stink on that. And you know, they'll be better for him. Things will just be work better for everyone, I think, when he's running the floor,
yeah,
when he's crashing the offensive glass, when he's doing the stuff that he's good at. The problem is just like, you know, how does he get reined in? Because right now he's taking 2 threes a game in his time with the Cavs after taking 3 on Saturday, tying his career high in 3-point attempts per game.
Yeah. Andre's been a little weird so far, I guess. Like, you and I kind of gone back and forth on this, and I'm still kind of piecing together a story from Forbes. For those of you who follow me on Twitter, I drank a monster at 9:30 last night and said I didn't give a frick. Well,
I watched him do this, and I was like, Evan, where did you get that from? And he just crushed it. Zero sugar, though. At least you didn't have the full sugar one. Like, I would have been a little more worried about your heart if that would have been the case.
You know what? I think I've told you before, if it's my time, it's my time. And if I die in the Cavs press box, so be it. But, no, I gave a frick when I was up till 2 a.m. last night. So, no, Drummond's just been like a little goofy. He told us post-game, you know, surprisingly such a soft-spoken guy. Just didn't really expect that. He was really short and brief with his answers, but he says he likes passing. He likes being involved more on the offense and that kind of thing. So I don't think it's anything that's going to go away. Chris and I both kind of rolled our eyes a few times when he would be like the lead point center in this, in some sets. And it's just, it doesn't feel right, but apparently the Cavs are comfortable with it because, again, JB Bickerstaff really didn't elaborate too much on it, but he wants to just kind of put them, he wants to put him in a position to succeed. So I think they're trying to find a common middle ground between the two. But he would have converted 66% of his shots last night if he didn't attempt those stupid three-pointers, and he was perfect from the free throw line, which is pretty good. And Kevin Love had a super efficient night with 20 points on 6-9 shooting. So like, it was a good solid night overall for two all-star caliber big men in Cleveland's front court rotation, and I'll gladly take that any day of the week. But just kind of a couple wonky sequences. And I think if we're starting to look ahead towards free agency in the draft, maybe more so free agency because defensive-minded wings really aren't growing off. They're not Jalen. You're not going to get a Jalen Brown in this year's draft. It's just the example I'm reaching for right now. But like, TJ Warren shredded the Cavs for 30 points, 6 assists, and 3 rebounds, mostly those 30 points. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon was pretty solid too, but that's just Cleveland's backcourt stinky defensively. So those are just some priority targets I'm pulling from this game as well. But just a weird game overall, but the Cavs are in it for the most part. And I just, like, I just kind of tell people in private, I'm like, yeah, no, they're a hell of a lot more competitive than they were the first 54 games under John Beilein. So you kind of have to take what you can get with this team at this point.
Yeah, the other thing I'll say about Drummond as we kind of get through the first bit here is Kevin Love and him, when they're on the floor, Kevin didn't take a shot until after Drummond had gone out of the game in the first quarter. And that, to me, feels pretty notable. I can't speak to, like, you know, like what the game plan is there yet. Like, I don't, you know, JB, it was sort of asked about sort of Drummond's fit, and like that was kind of something he didn't totally touch on, which I think is very fair. I think if you just look at everything, you know, in regards to figuring that out, I get emphasizing Drummond, but you know, that is just kind of going to be something to watch there. And we'll see exactly how that does kind of get managed going forward. I think it's 100%. Something to watch if you're kind of evaluating how these things are going to work and how the Cavs are going to handle it and what the plan is for Drummond there, especially because if you just think about it, like, there's a non-zero chance that they're both members of the team next year and they're starting front court and you're trying to figure out how to make it work. That is, like, frankly, I think, like, there's a non-zero chance that is the case. And you have to, I think, for the Cavs, you just kind of have to understand that finding these guys games who theoretically on the offensive end, like, should work pretty well together and give you some advantages, figuring out how to make that work it should be a priority. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Now you're going to hear from Bickerstaff talking about the 3-point shooting. And then we'll be back with more Locked On Cavs.
And those Drummond threes, I mean, will you ever say anything?
Yeah, I mean, we got to get to a point where the shot's got to go in, and it's all of our guys, right? If the shot's not going in, then it's not your shot. And you know, we got to make sure in crucial moments that we take our shots.
Hey, we're back here on today's Locked On Cavs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Chris Manning with my co-host, Evan Damerel. Evan, what else from this weekend stood out to you, either from Friday in New Orleans or Saturday in Cleveland?
Well, we for sure touched on the Pacers game enough, so let's jump back to this Pelicans game. Zion Williamson is as good as advertised. It's, he's incredible, and it's always just going to be a what-if because the Cavs kind of did get hosed in the draft lottery. Like, Darius Garland's a good rookie, but you do sometimes like sit there and think, like, man, what if the Cavs landed Zion? Like, how much fun would we have covering this team?
Yeah, I can tell you just like the economics of covering the Cavs is very different when you have someone that people like beyond the city care about. Like there was a big LeBron bump for us. I learned a lot from that, and I would selfishly like another chance to cover a notable guy, even though it's not easy. You look at Friday's game. He's just insane. And him and Ingram, I think, illustrate another guy. So the Williamson, Ingram, Drew Holiday trio really just kind of decimated the Cavs. Drew was fantastic. Ingram kind of got a whatever shot he wants, and Williamson kind of got whatever he wanted. And the Cavs had like moments where they kind of fought back and they were played a little tougher than I would have thought. And, you know, Colin in particular had a really, really good game. Garland, I think, had some good moments as well. KBJ had a kind of an overall rough ish game, he had a much better game on Saturday. Eye test wise, I thought he was much better on Saturday than he was Friday, but the stats don't really even bear that out. So maybe I'm just wrong, but you know, it's that game felt like the Cavs being a little bit outclassed by just guys that were just kind of better than them. But Sexton, to me, was the best player on the Cavs team.
Yeah, no, Colin definitely was. He hit 6 3-pointers, and Colin's just been consistently aggressive ever since he turned the corner on his like 3-point shooting slump. He's just been consistently aggressive and has been rounding himself out really well. And again, Chris and I aren't able to see the future, and he and I both are in the camp that maybe he's the sixth man long term, but you know, it at least he makes these games entertaining and competitive enough, and he's the kind of dude where he won't start phoning it in a la Kevin Love a little bit and just kind of shut it down mentally. Like, Colin will compete from the beginning of the game to the very end of the game, and even if Bickerstaff tries to pull him, I'm sure he tries to put himself back in the game. It's just, you know, it's that gym rat mentality that he was toted for. But yeah, no, I agree with you on your stance on Kevin Porter. I think he did have a bit of a rough outing against New Orleans, but, I mean, he did finish with 16-5-5 along with 2 steals and 1 turnover and 0 fouls. But, you know, KPJ has struggled with foul trouble throughout the season, and, you know, him having a 0 foul night is always a welcome surprise. But I'm just kind of like, I don't know, like I said, yeah, and also like you said, if the Cavs had somebody of the caliber of like a Zion Williamson or even Ja Morant, like just with outward appeal where people from like all over the country will be tuning in, like it would definitely juice this team for sure. And I'm just kind of waiting for that moment for the Cavs to strike, and maybe all their draft luck ran out the first time LeBron left, and they'll be just hitting singles till the day he comes back. But It was just a bit of a weird game overall, and I don't know. I mean, I'm glad Kevin Love didn't let another rookie try to end his life, because Ja Morant tried to do the same thing, and Zion did as well, and Kevin's really good at drawing that offensive charge. But yeah, it's just kind of like the game got out of hand pretty quick when Cleveland was down 43-25 and at the end of the first, and it just kind of felt like, well, let's put it this way. They won the second quarter and third quarter, and they tied New Orleans in the fourth quarter to 21 apiece. So Cleveland was just playing catch-up for the rest of the game. And they got close, but they just weren't able to get close enough. And like you said, I think it's because New Orleans may have themselves a legitimate playoff team with the Zion factor now in play. So it's just the Cleveland might have been outclassed, because clearly they're not a playoff team compared to New Orleans.
Yeah, the last thing here in this segment, Evan. Colin Sexton, I think to some degree, I think in either game, he's kind of becoming one of the guys that is really defining the Cavs in some way. I think, you know, I'll check this when you're talking, just so we have the exact kind of bit there, but he's definitely one of the leaders on the team in usage rate. He certainly takes a lot of shots. He plays with the ball in his hand a lot. He's certainly, I think, more noticeable on the court. than Darius Garland right now. And I think that
yeah.
just kind of bears out whenever we look at it. When you think about Sexton kind of defining the team as much as he is, do you think that there are, what would you just say the pros cons of that are, and or do you have just kind of a take on if how you feel about that in one way or the other?
I don't really know if I have a pros cons, because it's the same thing I've been regurgitating for the longest time. Like, Colin Sexton is a scorer first point guard who doesn't move the ball, so you consider him more of a shooting guard, but then he's an undersized shooting guard. And then he starts the grand debate of what is he? Is he a six man or is he a starting point guard, caliber point guard in this league? And there's obviously plenty of people in both camps at this point, and I think everyone is able to put two and two together and realize that I'm always going to be in the camp that he's a six man. But I kind of view him as, he's just a pest on both sides of the ball. Like, he plays aggressively on both ends. He has a lot of heart, a lot of determination. And I think if Tristan Thompson is able to, not able, but he will be gone after this summer, whether it's through a sign and trade or free agency, and I doubt Cleveland will get anything from Tristan in a sign and trade scenario. Maybe the Cavs lean on a little bit for Colin a little bit more, because golly, if you break it down, Colin's going to be one of, if besides Zizek, the most tenured Cavalier, and Zizek might be gone too, because we're assuming Kevin's going to be gone after this summer as well. You kind of lean on him to be that heart and soul guy like Tristan is, where like they kind of form that identity where they're just a scrappy team that plays fast and they play with a lot of intensity for 48 minutes. And I'm pretty comfortable with that. I think that's a good place to build a foundation. And I know we kind of roll our eyes at the whole buzzword with culture thing and what the Cavs are trying to build and at this point failing at building. But they did note that, like, I have noticed like a recurring theme where they draft high caliber kids out of college that like don't really, I mean, the Kevin Porter thing definitely feels overblown, because you and I both agree, like, by all accounts that he's been a pro's pro and like is absolutely adored by this organization from his attitude. But I think the Cavs are building the team in the right direction where they have players of the same mentality, where maybe they start to transition more towards that, and Colin can be the figurehead of that to just kind of guide this rebuild into year 2B and then eventually 3B and then hopefully the playoffs or something in a few years' time.
Yeah, I think that's right. Just so people have a rough estimate here of his usage. So, and aside from Malik Newman, who has played 4 minutes for the team this year, and Andre Drummond, who would be first in his six games, which is notable, Colin Sexton is first in usage rate with at 26.9. Kevin Love is at 23.1. KPJ at 20.7. Garland at 20.6. And if Jordan Clarkson's in there in certain spots. Like, you have guy, it's not just, you know, like the guys you expect. Tristan's in there, obviously, but it's a bit of a weird bag. But Colin is one of the driving engines of the team, and I think how he sort of works in concert with Kevin, how he works in concert with Drummond going forward are all going to be things we really need to kind of be paying attention to when we are evaluating this Cavs group. Okay, one last break. You'll hear a clip from Drummond's post-game press conference from Saturday, and then we'll be back for more Locked On Cavs.
Game seemed more like you. Did you feel that?
Yeah, you know, like I told you guys, you know, a week ago, that it's going to take me a little bit to figure it out, but over time I'm going to get better and better.
What can this kind of game do for you while you're still trying to figure it
out? I just have to continue to capitalize on it and continue to get better from here. Continue to learn the plays, learn my guys, and I'll be just fine.
Because this is so new for you, being traded midway through, new team, new environment, all that kind of stuff, has it been more difficult than even you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, definitely. Just never being in a situation. I thought coming here, I just figured out right away, but this is definitely a culture shock and definitely a change for me.
Hey, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Okay, last segment today is we're gonna play a little game. So we're gonna do here is I have not told Evan what these questions are, but I'm gonna ask him to buy or sell some different Cavs related things. And he was five of them. He's going to tell me buy or sell, and then we're going to just maybe talk about them at length if we need to. Perhaps we'll blow this out more instead of trying to do it in 8 minutes or so. But Evan, are you ready for your first one?
Is it going to be like James Rapine asking us last night, would you rather give DeMar DeRozan 4 years?
No, I don't hate you.
or Evan Fournier.
I would share leg day 60 routine. Million. I would discuss the, you know, like how you're structured your leg workouts with you if you wanted. You know,
that's, you're sweet, Chris. Thank you.
I just like fucking with James. okay, so here's the first one. We've seen the last couple games, and certainly it's certainly because of injuries, but Matthew Dellavedova has played. He has certainly played minutes. He's actually been fairly good. Buy or sell him being someone that should maybe get at least like 8 minutes a game just to kind of help organize things on the court, and that his kind of recent string of decent play is something that we should at least take with some, you know, with some kind of pay attention to it at least in some way.
Before I answer this, are we assuming the team's 100% healthy or just like what the team's currently at right now?
Let's just assume they get closer to being healthy. There's obviously some stuff where like the rotation's not fully full, and I think of guys miss games here or there, but let's say in like a week or so when like McKinney gets back and we kind of everything else kind of mostly normalizes, and we'll see what happens whenever Dante Exum gets back.
See, that was my answer. If Dante Exum isn't healthy, I say go for it. He's last night against India, he's averaging about, I mean, he's having a solid enough stretch. Like against New Orleans, he had 19 minutes. Indiana, he had 18. So I'd buy on that. But if Dante Exum is fully healthy and Dellavedova is still getting like meaningful minutes, but outside of, like you said, 8 maximum, I'd like to speak to the manager and I would complain about it. But I think I'd buy it. As like that 10th guy to round out the rotation where he needs maybe 8 minutes a night just to kind of spell this young guard rotation, I think I'm comfortable enough with that just because what the hell does Cleveland have to lose? They're not playing winning basketball right now.
Yeah, that sounds fair. Okay, next question. I would buy that as well, kind of what you said is there. Okay, next one for you is this. The Cavs over the last 2 weeks are 14th according to Cleaning the Glass in defensive rating. Buy or sell?
Like, this is sustainable long term. I'm selling. So fast.
Okay. Yes, me too. It's a little crazy.
Yeah, just a bit. I mean, it's in bad taste because John Beilein's 67 years old, but maybe it's a dead coach drop a little bit, and these players buying into JB. But I don't think it's sustainable, and I think, again, this is probably the kiss of death, but Cleveland's schedule is pretty brutal this week, so maybe it'll put those numbers back to where they were before the sudden surge.
Yeah, let's run through that schedule really quick. So they have the floundering Utah Jazz, who are just off note, just completely, you know, not in rhythm.
Hey, isn't it wild that the Jazz, like the people who cover this team, are like fed up with Rudy Gobert?
Yeah, tough look for Rudy Gobert. So they have Utah Monday, Boston Wednesday, Denver on Saturday, the Spurs then on Sunday, and then they have the Bulls and the Hornets. So you have like a string of tough games before you get to Atlanta and Houston. The two games in particular that I think are particularly troublesome would be Boston and Denver. And like if Jason Tatum keeps playing how he's played the last couple weeks, holy shit, the Cavs are screwed on Wednesday.
Oh, 100%. I used to dump on Jason Tatum a lot, and I don't think anyone saw this defensive growth of his. So my bad, I was wrong. So everyone can clip that and just hold on to it because I don't say it that often. But yeah, no, I think the Celtics are going to eviscerate Cleveland in like no mercy, sweep the leg kind of situation.
Yeah, I think that's right. 14th to me feels unsustainable, but good for them for playing that defense over the last couple weeks. Okay, next one, Evan, buy or sell? The coaching change has actually created or push the Cavs to try harder and play with more effort. And that is something that you would expect to sustain through the end of the season.
Oh, I buy that. JV, it's been reported for a while that the team began deferring to JV when they were tuning out Beilein, and it just kind of makes sense. And I tweeted it last night, and I kind of like pondered it a little bit in my writing that Cleveland may be the same record-wise right now if J.B. Bickerstaff is the head coach for like this entire season instead of his short stint so far. But at least they'd probably be playing at this kind of engaged level where he has the respect of his locker room. And I mean, yeah, there's going to be some ugly losses along the way, like that Miami one not too long ago. But I think I'm totally comfortable saying, yeah, the Cavs are going to play a little bit more locked in just to round out the season.
I would agree with that as well. I think it's you feel, I think the guys trust in JB a little bit more. And I think that's notable. Mm-hmm. I feel as if like that is something that certainly will continue to be the case and at least kind of make us feel a little more at ease about kind of evaluating him kind of going forward as the captain coach. Again, we know that he's going to be that guy as we kind of round through this. Okay, next one. Colin Sexton for the year is taking 4 3 throws a game. That, Evan, is up from him last year at 3.1. That is not a notable. That is a pretty notable thing. But if you look post the All-Star break, including a game recently where he shot 10, Colin is up to taking 5.7 a game. Buy or sell Colin Sexton in this trend of him recently getting to the free throw line more is a sustainable thing that is going to be continue to be part of his evolution as a player.
I'm going to sell.
Hater. Evan hates Colin Sexton. Cut that out. Throw it on Reddit, please. Thank you.
People already think I do. So good on you for calling me out on something I have heard for like the zillionth time this week already. Shout out to you, Chris. You asked JB about this last night, actually. It's definitely something Cleveland's trying to do and they encourage him to be aggressive, but I don't know. I just want to believe this is sustainable, but I think this team has kind of broken me and made me jaded like you warned me when I first started covering them closely. And I'm just going to take the cynic route and just assume it's just going to go back to the median and the norm. And I'm more than happy to be proven wrong. And if you call me a hater and clip this and just tell me over and over again, like, oh, see, he sustained it and he actually got better. I'm like, cool. That means he's growing a lot. And I'm very happy with that.
Evan, this would be the first time we've like actually disagreed. Don't know. I don't know, because we were sort of like on the same wave. We have sort of the same like view on this stuff. But I actually disagree with you, because having talked to SJB about this on Saturday, and he was sort of not like kind of was like, yeah, I would say gave me a good answer to it. But talking to some people in the organization on Saturday and picking their brains a little bit and kind of thinking about how Colin changed watching him split, I do think that's one of the things that is changing with him is he's trying to get to the line more. And I do not, and I think it's just him using his speed in a more efficient way. I don't think it's, he's not like flailing. I don't think you're going to see him turn into like James Harden anytime soon, like and hunt for foul shots in that way. But I do think he's trying to use that speed, put his pressure on the defense and really make an impact in that way. Mm-hmm. I would need to see it go into next year. I would need to kind of see it hold up. But I do think
actually.
I'm buying it. I'm going to buy stock in this. And I think this is, you know, as much as I think the passing stuff was improved with Colin, this, I think if you look at him and him maybe being a six man in the future or whatever, I think him, it's a small sample size, whatever. It's only the 6 games, but I think him like leaning into the free throw stuff more, and you know he's shooting like under his career average since the All-Star break, so like theoretically it should get better from here. I do think the free throw stuff with him is his next step in terms of being the next step in him becoming more efficient and kind of taking some kind of progression step forward as he rounds out your team, goes into year 3.
Okay, so. 2 things. I got a good joke for everyone. We don't worry about Colin being James Harden because they already got Andre Drummond hunting 3-pointers instead. And 2, I think I'm more of the camp where I'm not trying to be a Colin Sexton hater here. I'm really not. I like Colin a lot. I think his family's super nice, and the fact that like they clip articles like that Chris and I and everybody else writes and send some to Colin to like as words of encouragement because he was really struggling with his 3-point slump. Like I feel for him really bad in that regard, but like I'm more so maybe cautious in buying stock because I want to see this sustain itself and carry into next season. If it does, I'm all in, baby. Like, I'll be the biggest Sexton's fanboy you'll ever see. Still disagree with him wearing number 2, but that's an argument for another day.
I did see a kid with the taped over Kyrie and put Sexton on his jersey there, so that was cool.
That's nice, though. Yeah, embracing the kid, which is
good. I mean, at least like, he didn't have to buy a new jersey. Like, I appreciate that kid being,
thrifty. Practical. Yeah, there we go. Economically sensible, which is smart in the Midwest.
Yeah. Okay. Last one here.
Let's do it.
Buy or sell. Okay. The Cavs have four bigs right now in Drummond, Love, Nance, and Thompson that are probably going to play. JB, when I kind of asked about Tristan on Saturday, kind of was like, you have to play Tristan. Like, I can't not play Tristan Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Buy or sell that that is something that there are ways to kind of make that foursome work.
On the court at the same time?
No. Okay. God, no. That's a disaster. But it finding JB being able to find stuff to make it work. It's like finding ways to make that work.
I mean, he's made it work already, I'd say. Granted, Drummond's riding the pine in the closing moments of games, and like Kevin was too, in that win over Washington where JB kind of leaned on Larry and Tristan instead of Andre and Kevin, which I think is the right thing to do, and I think they're all grown-ass adults, and they understand the reality of the situation where JB's just going to ride the hot hand, and I think that's the right way to go about it. And, I mean, sometimes he'll get a little weird with it and maybe play Kevin, Larry, and Tristan together, and maybe he'll get really weird with it and play Larry, Tristan, and Andre together and make me want to gouge my eyes out, but I think I'll buy that. Like, I think it's definitely doable, and I think the fact that Tristan and Kevin are already so comfortable with each other, and I think Larry has an established rapport with those two because he's been here for 3 years now, and Andre is clearly on friendly terms, and at least I consider friends just through the luxury of having the same agent with Kevin. That definitely helps, and I think him kind of being more or less the best player on the team, depending on who you ask, helps as well. So I'm buying it. I think the Cavs can make this work for however long they have left this season.
I'm going to sell just because I think there's a little bit of – I think there are certain pairings that I don't want to, like, pull data on those just yet, but I think when you've watched them, you've seen how the teams played with certain lineups in, I'm a little worried about if they can work or not. So, like, I don't think – I do not think Tristan and Drummond should play a single minute together the rest of the year.
Have they yet?
Yeah. I don't think it's a lot, but they have. I'll look that up as we're doing that here, just so I can properly, like,
it must have been traumatic. It must have been traumatic for me, and I'm just blocking
it. Evan, so. Evan, just his brain is like just absolutely destroyed. When I look at these instances where, like, I think Tristan can kind of play with everyone but Drummond. You know, I like the theoretical fit with Kevin and with Drummond, but if, you know, there's been times where it's clearly, like, you know, impacted what Kevin's like. I think I noted this when we talked about Saturday's game. I thought when those two play together, like, Kevin kind of gets lost a little bit, and he's really good. And you shouldn't be, like, not giving up all of Kevin's touches to, like, accommodate Drummond. I don't think that's what you should be doing. So maybe Kevin should be playing with Tristan and Larry with Drummond. I think that they sort of almost can have to be done in sort of hockey situations and kind of figure that out. Yeah. So I don't know. So here's just it's only 23 possessions with those two guys, according to Cleaning the Glass, with Drummond and Tristan together. Here it is in 23 possessions. They are scoring 100 points per 100 possessions. That would be in the bottom 4% of all lineups this year. They have a turnover percentage of 34.4%. The only thing that they rate out as, like, in terms of a good is their offensive rebounding rate at 50%. There's literally nothing good about those two playing together so far. And I just think the theoretical fit with no spacing, with everything you want to say about Drummond and everything like that, like, I just don't think there's anything that I would be like, wow, I want to see more of this. I want to kind of invest in this. It goes for either the play Zizic as well. Like, I wouldn't play Zizic with Drummond, and they haven't done that. And, like, you know, Zizic, obviously, Tristan's a much better player than Ante Zizic, but, like, they're, in terms of how far they stretch the floor and stuff, and, like, their ability to create space for Drummond, they do the same thing in that sense. So I just don't want to see them play together again. So I'm a little wary about how that works out. I think it gets easier. I think if there is some load management involved and it's only 20 something games and you just make it work, it's not a huge deal, but I do wonder how. I think that's kind of one of the many things JB's going to have to monitor going forward.
Yeah, I'd agree. And no, I don't ever want to see Tristan and Andre sharing the floor together unless it's like some super weird situation or like, I don't know. Like, I can't even find a way to justify it. Like, that just seems stupid. And it seems like it's counterproductive. And I feel like you're being a detriment to your team, which is something I criticize Drummond for. And JB doing that just feels like a disservice for, as his duties as a head coach. And yeah, no, it's not good at all. And I'm totally still going to buy the stock. I mean, hell, if it's cheap, I'll sit on it and wait what happens. And then maybe I cash in on the stock and buy some of that Colin Sexton's stock that you're smoking up right now. So I don't know. It's just, I think it's doable, and it just depends on niche situations. But yeah, no, just never play Tristan and Andre together. That's just all I ask, please.
That being said, I would like to see the Kevin, Larry, Tristan, Ante, Drummond lineup.
I mean, yeah, I would too. It'd be absolutely weird. It's like teams when they run. It's what Houston's doing. It's like the antithesis of what Houston's doing right now.
Played against them. That's actually what I want.
You know what? Yeah. The Cavs are just so counterculture and everything else that they ignore the three-point movement and they just go back to the traditional way basketball played back when you would play for like a loaf of bread and half a bowl of soup. So,
yeah.
There you go.
All right. Evan, any final thoughts as we get out of here for this Monday episode of Lockdown Cavs?
Cleveland plays Utah tomorrow, and I think, like you said, they're floundering, so it might be a winnable game for the Cavs, but I guess I'm just going to go in with the expectation that they're not going to win, but yeah. It'll at least be fun. That's all I can hope for.
Yeah, I just saw someone on Twitter shared a video of Delonte West throwing an alley-oop to LeBron James where he like threw it over his back shoulder without really looking, but kind of looking, but just Delonte West was great, and I hope he's doing better. Young LeBron was insane. But yes, I think this is an interesting week. Obviously, you have what's going on with the Jazz. You have the Celtics. You Denver on Saturday. It's a tough week for the Cavs. We'll see how they handle it. We'll recap all the games here on the Locked On Cavs feed. You find Evan on Twitter and not Evan. I'm on Twitter at @CBoomerant. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Deion Waiters is getting attraction from the Lakers. We didn't even touch on that.
Buddy, I tweeted this. It is there. I need it. I really need that.
Yeah. Shout out to our guy, Jeff Nomina, who apparently might be outing him a little bit, but his wife has a huge crush on Deion Waiters. So Jeff might be a Lakers household pretty soon, which good for him, I guess. He can watch a winning product.
Okay. Just you have to pick one. I don't want explanation or anything. J.R. Smith or Deion Waiters and the Lakers, which one do you prefer?
Deion Waiters.
Yeah, it's better for the content.
Yeah, I need a little bit of that meme team still in my life, and Deion just pushes the needle a bit more for me.
Yeah, should be easy access to good edibles in LA too. So, and that's gonna be it for Lock and Cab.